It's a first date.
It's 8:30 New York time. Time to wake up America and stump the experts. Each week at this time, Lucky Strike offers you an opportunity to match your wits against four super wits. You provide the questions and our experts try to answer them. Remember, for every question used, Lucky Strike will give you not only $10 in war stamps, but a set of the 12-volume Britannica Junior Encyclopedia. If the question is muffed, you get the Junior Britannica plus a $50 war bond plus a 24-volume set of the regular Encyclopedia Britannica. Send your questions to Information, Please, 480 Lexington Avenue, New York City. If our editorial staff edits your questions a bit, don't fret over it. In case of similarity, we'll have to be sole judge of who shall be paid, and all questions become the property of Information, Please. And now light up a Lucky Strike as I present our master of ceremonies, book reviewer of the New Yorker magazine, Clifton Fadiman. Mr. Fadiman.
Thank you, Mr. Clark. Ladies and gentlemen, free and easy and go as you please. Information, Please continues on its spontaneous path, the spontaneity being provided this week by the tried and true trio, Oscar Levant, Franklin P. Adams, and John Kieran, and our special guest, the eminent triple talker and Hollywood maestro, Gregory Ratoff, director of the forthcoming Columbia picture, Something to Shout About, which Mr. Ratoff says is merely a super sensational smash. We're going to begin this evening with a question from Hope Alling Reynolds of Waterbury, Connecticut. And it's divided into four parts. Let's see if we can get three out of four. The following names, gentlemen, are used in menus for dishes that are prepared with meat. Give the full name of the dish and tell what meat is used in preparing each of them. I'll give you part of the name. Now, the first is Benedict. Benedict. Mr. Kieran.
Eggs Benedict.
Eggs Benedict. Now, what meat is used in Eggs Benedict?
Ham.
Ham is right. Very good. Now we have a little harder one. Pojarski. Pojarski, Mr. Ratoff.
Pojarski cutlets.
Yes, Pojarski cutlets. Very good. And what meat is used, Mr. Ratoff?
Wheel.
What did you say?
Wheel. Wheel.
A wheel.
W-E-A-L. Wheel. Wheel.
A wheel is something that goes around and around and
that's
around.
Right.
That's probably what you think a veal is.
That's the best Russian food. So that's
it is?
Yeah,
it's
wonderful.
Wheel and chicken.
It's
wheel.
The cheapest, too.
Yes, those are... What is...
I was a member of that club once.
Pojarski?
League of American Wheelmen.
what does Pojarski mean, Mr. Ratoff?
Pojarski, it was a general in Russia about 1,000 years ago.
Made cutlets out of them.
Yeah. No. He loved those cutlets very much.
He did?
So they, in honor of him, they called it Pojarski cutlets.
Ah, that's very touching, Mr. Ratoff. Thank you very
you
much.
You have heard of the another dish called Befala Stroganov. That was another general called Stroganov.
They name all their dishes after generals?
Yeah. Yeah, most
that's
of them.
That's a good idea.
They're white generals.
They're
all
caviar.
The generals, the Russian generals, they win the war, so we
you bet
can
they
at
do.
Least give them the cutlets.
You bet. How about this one? Tetrazzini. Tetrazzini, Mr. Levant.
That's spaghetti with cheese, and it's very white for some unknown reason.
No, you haven't got it quite right.
It's spaghetti tetrazzini with white and a colatura of voice, I guess.
No, but you still haven't got any meat.
Cheese.
No, cheese is not meat, I think.
There's no... Oh, chicken, chicken.
Yes, chicken tetrazzini. Yes,
well, where I come from, you can't see the chicken.
Nevertheless, chicken tetrazzini, which is not named after a general, Mr. Ratoff.
Yeah, I know. She was wonderful.
I know.
I'm just showing off for Oscar, you know. Just to tell him.
And now, finally, Wiener. Wiener.
Schnitzel.
Thank you, Mr. Ratoff. Yes.
Wiener Schnitzel, that's again Will.
That's our old friend.
That's again Will.
But it's got an egg on top.
Mr. Ratoff's old friend, Will. How about this one from Mrs. Howard B. Merritt of Westfield, New Jersey? Well, I'm going to give you a short description of some children that you'll find in poetry. Tell me where we find them. The first child is a thankless child. Mr. Kieran.
Well, a thankless child is mentioned in King Lear, how sharper than a serpent's tooth it is to have a thankless child.
Yes, that's exactly right. How about Fancy's child? Fancy's child, Mr. Adams?
That's from Milton.
That is from Milton, yes. And what's the reference?
I think it's in L'Allegro.
It is indeed. Quite right. Who is Fancy's child?
something other fancies child, and if Johnson's learned sock beyond is in there, too.
Yes, it is in there. Just a sentence before. Mr. Kieran?
Then to the well-trod stage anon, if Johnson's learned sock beyond, or sweetest Shakespeare fancies child, warble his native wood notes wild.
That's perfect, John. Very good. That was a nice double play. Now, how about this one? A three-years child, Mr. Adams.
He listens like a three-years child, the mariner hath his will.
That's right. Very good, Mr. Adams. What's it from?
From the Rime of the Ancient Mariner.
I think you boys are going on all cylinders this evening. Thank you very much. How about this from D.I. Glick of New York City? What producer would you associate with a film in which each of these stars appeared? For example, Deanna Durbin. What for Mr. Retoff?
Joe Pasternak, the producer of my next picture.
He
hope
is?
He's listening.
We all hope he's listening. Joe Pasternak, yes. Anna Nagel, Mr. Levant.
Herbert Wilcox.
And Gary Cooper. Mr. Radoff.
Samuel G. Goldwyn.
Yes. Samuel?
Samuel G. Goldwyn.
What is he? Does he have a middle initial?
Mr. No, I got mixed up.
Well, give it to him. He likes
well,
him.
Well, no,
likes
Samuel Goldwyn. That's good enough.
Sure, that's good enough for you. How about this from Russell Shepard of Kenmore, New York? Name a work of the imagination, a novel or play or whatever, in which a member of royalty or nobility appears in the following roles. In which a member of the nobility appears as a shepherd. This would be a play in which...
Was that the Maxwell Anderson play about Jerusalem last year?
I didn't see it. I don't know.
It's awful safe to guess that.
I'm inclined to think not, just offhand.
Shepherd, what could be Wagner? No.
Yeah, I know.
L'Aiglon.
That's the Rostand's play in which the son of Napoleon appears as a shepherd. He comes for the interview to his grandfather dressed as a shepherd.
That's very good. I'm sure that's right. Is that right, Mr.
Kieran? That's perfectly correct.
Perfect response. Hey, you're very good this evening, Mr. Mr. Kieran, would there be another one in Shakespeare?
Yes, there is, in Winter's Tale.
In Winter's Tale, there is one, and also in As You Like It.
How about Joan of Arc? I'm not clear on it.
Well, she is a shepherd girl. That's true.
Well,
but she's not a member of royalty or nobility.
She becomes that.
Well, she becomes a very great personage, but not a member of royalty or nobility. How about a work in which a member of royalty appears as a ragamuffin?
Who?
I know.
Well, a ragamuffin is a tough one. Ragamuffin, you know what a ragamuffin is? It's a sort of wheel cutlet, a little ragged... Mr. Adams?
Prince and the Pauper,
yes, the Prince Edward.
Well, now, you see, that thing I know by heart, but I didn't know the word ragamuffin.
Well, now you know
I
it by...
I read Prince and the Pauper when I was 6 years old. As a matter of fact, in my country, everybody, every child...
Reads the Prince and the Pauper.
And the Uncle Stump Cabin. That's the two most favorite.
And that's all.
Uncle Stump Cabin.
Lots of other things, too, but this particular, these two.
Well, now you not only know it by heart, but you know what ragamuffin means. This is a very big evening for you.
Ragamuffin.
After the...
That's me.
You Mr. Adams, after this is all over, you tell Mr. Radoff what ragamuffin is. He'll be crazy about it. How about a work in which a member of royalty, a member of the nobility, appears as a tree dweller? Tree dweller. Guy who lives in trees, Mr. Kieran.
Who lived there?
Mm-hmm. Who lives in trees, more or less?
Tarzan,
yes. Is he a nobleman?
It all depends on how MGM does on him this year.
Well, he is a nobleman in Edgar Rice Burroughs' stories. He's Lord Greystoke in disguise. I've never read the stories, but I'm sure...
He's been unfrocked, as you know.
Has he been?
Well, look at his pictures.
How about this one? Joseph Rich of Hartford, Connecticut, sends this in. We're going to listen to some singing, gentlemen. What boy met girl to this music? And let's have the first. I have two hands, Mr. Radoff and Mr. Levant.
Rudolfo in Bohem.
Yes, Rudolfo meets what girl?
He meets the girl that he falls in love with.
Yes,
Mimi.
Mimi. Just to give the credit where credit is due, that was Mr. Adams. Now the next one.
Pretty, pretty maiden, pretty, tell me true. Hey, but I'm doleful, willow.
Mr. Adams?
That would be Patience, the milkmaid.
Yeah, Patience, the milkmaid. And,
Grosvenor.
And Grosvenor. What does he say to her? Under what conditions does he meet her, and what does he say?
Will you marry me? Hey, Willoway, Leo.
Well, it sounded a little better before, but that's the idea. And now the third and last of these meetings.
If they asked me, I could write a book about the way you walk and whisper and look.
That's very nicely sung. Mr. Levant?
Pal Joey.
Pal Joey, and sings the song to whom?
To a little girl named Lila Ernst. She's married now.
Is she? How's she coming along?
They're in front of a dog or a canary store on 6th Avenue. Kelly's his name, the boy.
Yes, the girl's name in the play, the musical comedy, is Linda.
Linda?
Yes, Linda. But you knew her real name, which is much better. That gives us 3 out of 3, and so far we've had no muffs. And now Mr. Rysdale says that the phrase, times a wastin', can be applied most appropriately to the subject of cigarettes.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, perhaps you've been intending to try Lucky's, but then you keep putting it off. If so, you may be missing something. For make no mistake, in a cigarette, it's the tobacco that counts. Better tobacco gives you more mildness, better taste, a more enjoyable cigarette all around. And smokers, Lucky Strike means fine tobacco. Let me repeat. Lucky Strike means fine tobacco. So round, so firm, so fully packed, so free and easy on the draw. Yes, smokers, the makers of Lucky's know that no cigarette can be any better than the tobacco from which it's made. That's why, at market after market, year after year, our buyers consistently select the riper, lighter, milder tobacco. The truly Lucky Strike tobacco that gives you a better cigarette. Mr. Fadiman, have I demonstrated that for smokers who haven't tried a Lucky lately, time's really a wastin'?
Mr. Rysdale, your 60-second summary of the facts surely calls for action now. And now a question from Mrs. Edwin N. Foote, Jr. of Cornwall Bridge, Connecticut. Very nice town, too. What was the huntsman seeking when I tell you the following phrases? Daddy's gone a-hunting. What was the huntsman hunting for, Mr. Adams?
To get a little rabbit skin.
Yes, to wrap a baby bunting in. That's right. You wouldn't have sung that in Russia, Mr. Rattout, years ago.
Not yet, no.
It's a little song.
Rabbitsky, he'd say.
What was the huntsman seeking in this? They sought it with thimbles, they sought it with care. They sought it with thimbles, they sought it with care.
What's sought mean?
By Lewis
sought
Carroll.
Sought is the past of seek.
Is that like ragamuffin?
An irregular verb. Terribly irregular. Mr. Adams, what were you saying?
That's by Lewis Carroll.
It is indeed. What were they hunting? I know you know it somehow.
Oh, it's a very long...
The hunting of what?
Snark.
Why, of course, snark. Hunting of the Snark by Lewis Carroll. Very good. What does snark mean?
Boojum.
The snark was a boojum, you see.
Yeah, and that's all we're going to tell folks tonight. Mm-hmm. What was the huntsman seeking in this phrase? The prize we sought is won. What prize, Mr. Kieran?
That was the victory in the Civil War. Yes. That's from Captain, Oh My Captain by Walt Whitman.
That's exactly right, yes. And now about this. How about this one from Harold Hirschfield of New York City? I kind of like this question. What's the difference, gentlemen, between a blend of straight whiskeys and a blended whiskey? Perhaps you've never thought there was any difference.
You dare a conundrum, boy?
No, that ain't no conundrum. No, that's a real question.
A blend of what?
A blend of straight whiskies, you know what that is, Mr. Levant, and a blended whiskey, Mr. Rattoff.
A blended whiskey is a whiskey that is cut. And the different blends of whiskey is just the different tastes and makes.
No.
That's the bootlegger version.
No, I think Mr. Levant is right. That's a very cynical way of putting it. Mr. Kieran?
Well, I have an idea what a blended whiskey is, and a great many wines, too, are blended. They are blended from the beginning, and they are mellowed as a unit that becomes a blended whiskey and is aged in that style. But blending straight whiskeys, I wouldn't know anything about.
Well, there's a very definite difference. A blend of straight whiskeys is a mixture of whiskeys that are often of different ages, just as they come from the still with nothing added. You take each whiskey, the whiskeys and put them together. But blended whiskey is a mixture of straight whiskey or whiskeys plus alcohol, neutral spirits.
Well, that's what I said.
You did?
Word for word.
I never heard you say that.
What I said, that the difference is that the blended whiskey is the whiskey that is cut. Or what you said, that it's the whiskey which is added, the alcohol in the whiskey.
Is this that famous Russian stubbornness that we hear so much about?
You got me here among the experts. They know everything. I know nothing, but whiskey, I know.
You know what he's trying to say?
No.
Gentlemen prefer blends.
Nevertheless, I don't think we got that quite accurately, Mr. Rathoff, and I'm going to count that.
I got it very accurate.
You did?
Maybe you didn't understand me, but I said exactly what you...
Your answer is okay with Rathoff.
He said it wrong in a few million words.
Look, try this one, Mr. Rathoff. I bet you can do just as well on this, or even more confusing. How about this? Brandy and cognac. What's the difference between brandy and cognac, Mr. Levant?
I don't know. I drink them both. Cognac is more Kimmel in it.
Oh, no. Cognac has no Kimmel in it at all.
It hasn't, huh?
No. Still, it's an idea. Mr. Kieran?
Well, for one thing, cognac proper is the product of a very special region in France.
That's
cognac,
right. That's exactly right. And brandy?
Brandy may come from any great region.
And what may it be made from?
Well, it may be made from almost any wine. A lot of it's made from champagne. They call it fine champagne. And
no, that's some, not true.
It depends on the kind of toes that step on the grapes.
Well, brandy.
It's a high power liqueur.
Well, cognac may be very high power, too.
Double
brandy,
distilled.
Brandy can be distilled not only from grapes, but from apricots or any other fruits. But cognac is a grape brandy, as Mr. Kieran reminds us, made in a special district, the Cognac District. Well, I think on the whole, Mr. Kieran, your answer is correct. How about vodka and slivovitz? Vodka and slivovitz, Mr. Rack.
That's where that goes.
Vodka is the Russian national drink that is made out of the wheat and slivovitz. Wheat, not wheel.
Made out of what?
Vodka is the drink that is made out of wheat.
Wheat. Oh, what we have on
the
program.
They make the bread
wheat.
From.
Yes, I understand.
Cream of wheat.
And
know.
Slivovitz. And slivovitz is a Polish a drink made out of the prune.
Yes, prunes or plums. It's made throughout the Balkans, not only in Poland. That's right. And what was that thing, the Russian national drink again?
From wheat.
Yeah, but I know. What did you call it? What's it called?
W-H-E-A-T.
Oh, all right. But I want to know how you say vodka, because I like to listen.
Vodka.
Ah, that's wonderful. That's fine. All right, fine. I'm going to bring that home with me. Vodka. All right. How about this one? See, we got one wrong and two right on that. That sends us on to Peggy Gardner's question. This one comes from Piedmont, California. Each of these men, gentlemen, was notorious. That means you got notorious.
Yes.
Before. Oh,
yes.
Okay.
Well, something like a ragamuffin.
Notorious as an aide, helper to some despot or tyrant. Who is the despot? Now, the first fellow is Vyacheslav von Pleva. Vyacheslav von Pleva. He helped a despot. What despot?
He helped despot.
He did.
Yes.
Got it, Mr. Rathoff?
Yes, I have to
I'm probably mispronouncing that.
No, you're pronouncing it beautiful.
Yeah?
Peter the Great.
No.
Rathoff the Great.
No. Ivan the Terrible.
No.
Rathoff
the Terrible. It's about 60, 70 years ago.
Alexander III of Russia.
That's right. Yes.
Zip goes the encyclopedia.
Well, no, maybe get the next two. Joseph Fouché helped a despot to Mr. Levant. Who was that?
Napoleon.
He was the head of his secret police. Joseph Terboven.
He's in Norway right now.
Yes.
He's the Gauleiter of Norway.
Yes, so doing his best to be one. And he, of course, we don't have to even mention... Don't mention his name. Mr. Terboven has his hands full at the moment, but not as full as he's going to have them pretty soon. Well, that gives us two out of three. How about this one from Margaret Thomas of Warren, Ohio? This is, again, a musical question, gentlemen. What mountains do you associate with these compositions? There'll be three of them played. They should bring to mind a mountain or a mountain range. Is that clear? Let's have the first. Thank you. I have two hands, Mr. Rathoff and Mr. Levant. Mr. Rathoff?
Caucasian Mountains by Ippolitov Ivanov.
Yes, the Caucasian
Sketches.
Or Suite, yes. Yeah. Well, what is that particular part that was being played by the studio pianist? Does that have a special name, Mr.
No, Levant? That's the most popular part.
Procession of the Sardar.
The Sardar. There are three movements to it. The second one begins with a viola solo.
Very lovely.
Well,
you said it was by Ippolitov Ivanov.
That's right.
Say that, Ippolitov Ivanov, for us.
Ippolitov Ivanov.
Thank you. I love to hear you say that. That's fine. And now the next one. I again have two hands. Mr. Kieran.
That is the favorite song of Uncle Franz Frisch, the manager of the Pittsburgh Pirates in the Blue Ridge Mountains of Virginia.
That's right, the Blue Ridge Mountains. Mr. Levant had his hand up, too. Now, the third and last of these. Mr. Levant.
In the Hall of the Mountain King by Grieg.
And what mountains are they?
That was a Peter Lorre mountain. He whistled that in M when he killed all the kids.
Yes.
That's an Ibsen play.
Yes.
Peer Gynt.
Yes. You got all, everything you say is correct, but I still want to know.
Mr. Kieran knows the mountain.
I think it's Norway.
Yes, the Norwegian mountains. I don't know what the name in Norwegian would be.
You don't know either.
Well, they're Norwegian mountains. That's the point. How about this one from Israel Lerner of Brooklyn? Or perhaps better, we better save that for the last part of the program. And now here's a question that should be of particular interest to cigarette smokers. Do the tobacco experts at the auctions see the kind of tobacco that is bought for Lucky Strike and other cigarettes as well?
Mr. Fadiman, the answer is emphatically yes. Independent experts, auctioneers, buyers, and warehousemen attending the auctions obviously see just who buys what tobacco. And being independent, not connected with any cigarette company, they can be truly impartial judges. So it means a lot that with these independent experts, with men who know tobacco best, it's Lucky's 2-1.
If I may add a word, Mr. Cross, every smoker knows that in a cigarette, it's the tobacco that counts. Better tobacco makes a better smoke. So, ladies and gentlemen, isn't it clearly to your own advantage to take a tip from the independent tobacco experts? Remember, at market after market, year after year, these experts, present at the sales, see the makers of Lucky's consistently buy the riper, the lighter, the naturally milder Lucky Strike leaf. Yes, Lucky Strike means fine tobacco, so round, so firm, so fully packed, so free and easy on the draw.
Thank you, Mr. Risedale and Mr. Cross. That took 59 seconds. And now we'll go on with a question from Israel Lerner of Brooklyn. Identify these animals who went on journeys. The first was a cat who went to the coast of Africa. What cat was that? Mr. Kieran, was that your hand?
No,
I
didn't.
Creeping up?
When you got to the coast of Africa, I quit.
You were probably right anyway. What cat were you going to say?
I was going to say Dick Whittington.
That's correct. Went to Africa. See, you were right all along.
I didn't know it went that far.
Yeah? Did you never know that, Mr. Adams?
No.
Should I tell you the story?
Yes.
Well.
Oh, that's right. I know that.
Mr. Kieran?
Sent it off on a trade and got rich by it.
Yes, he was sold as a mouser to a Moorish king. Well, that's in Africa, Mr. Adams, isn't it? Now, how about this one? A donkey who went looking for a rose. That is a tough one.
That was Nelson Eddy, the donkey song. Song of the donkey.
This is really a tough one.
In quest of a rose?
Yeah, a donkey who went in quest of a rose. Well, there's an old character in a story by Lucius Apuleius, the Golden Ass. And Lucian, according to this tale, was turned into an ass, and he had to eat roses to be transformed back into a man. That's the whole point of the story. Does that come back to you, Mr. Ratto?
Yes. Were those roses blended?
Oh, no. One dozen unblended roses.
You were thinking of the four roses.
That gives us one wrong. How about a dog who went on a philosophical quest? A dog who went on a philosophical quest, Mr. Kieran?
Well, it was a story by Heywood Broun. Wasn't it?
Gandalf follows his note? No.
No, I don't think so. At least I'm not familiar with it. The only answer I can think of is Gissing, the famous character in Christopher Morley's lovely novel, Where the Blue Begins. That loses us a $50 war bond going out to Mr. Lerner and a set of the Britannica, courtesy of Lucky Strike. And how about this one from Louis Birenbaum of New York? I'll read some invented headlines that Mr. Birenbaum made up. From these headlines, give the title of the play that they describe. Here's the first. Six aliens and American girl are arrested for creating a disturbance. My sister Eileen. Who are the aliens?
The aliens are South American La Conga dancers.
The Brazilian Army.
Yes, practically. The Brazilian
Army. And the Navy, as a matter of fact.
Navy, that's right. Naval cadets. They're arrested, as Mr. Levant reminds us, for doing the Conga. How about this? Attempted suicide ends in double tragedy.
That's arsenic if you multiply it.
Well, it isn't arsenic, really.
Oh, Angel Street.
No, there wasn't any attempted suicide.
You know, I didn't hear the question. Here I go.
Attempted suicide. Trouble is, I heard the answer. Attempted suicide ends in double tragedy. I have to call that wrong so far. Now, how about it, gentlemen? It's Ethan Frome. Remember Ethan and Matty in the play, in the novel? Attempt suicide in the sleigh ride. It doesn't succeed, that is, they don't succeed in killing themselves, and the rest of their life is a result of that lack
of
success.
Well, you can have a million answers for that. Aida, well, Romeo and Juliet,
we
don't
have it, though. Mm. How about this one? Proprietor of hotel for indigent itinerants found dead.
That's I love you, I love you, I love you.
Oh, no. Shall I say that again, Mr. Radoff?
I am very attentive.
Yes, you are.
I hear everything you say, but I cannot remember.
What kind of place?
Proprietor of hotel for indigent itinerants found dead. Now, Mr. Adams, do you want to tell Mr. Radoff what indigent itinerants are?
Poor travelers.
That's right.
You mean bums, don't you?
Bums.
Yeah.
Might be.
Found dead?
They are found dead. Well, the proprietor of this hotel is found dead.
Well, that's the lower depth.
That's
by Gorky?
Right. That's right, Mr. Radoff. That's very good.
That's
so pulling it out of the hat.
That's terrible.
Now, that's pulling it out of the hat. It's a difficult question. Thank you. Now, how about this one from John McClellan of Arlington, Virginia? What was the original meaning of these insulting words? The first word is knave.
Knave?
Knave. K-N-A-V-E. Knave, Mr. Radoff. Mr. Kieran.
Boy.
Yes,
Knabe.
That's right.
German. Jack. Well, Jack in the carts.
Well, that's what it has come to mean, that. It's Middle English boy. From the Middle Anglo-Saxon Knafa, boy or youth. The German is similar. How about villain? Villain. What's the original meaning of the word villain? Mr. Kieran again.
A villain was a worker on the soil who was attached to a little village. And he was merely a laborer, and because most of the laborers were poor and ignorant, it got that worse of meaning, which now...
Yes. Isn't that one of the laws of language that very often...
That's right.
I forget what the law is called. I think the law of pejorative meaning or something like that. Words get to be nastier and nastier. One of those cutlets. How about cad? Cad. We call a man a cad. What does the word originally mean? Mr. Kieran again, our expert.
I think originally that came from the French cadet.
That's right. And what did
a younger son, and the younger sons were generally a worthless lot in those early days, as they say, and so we got this worse meaning from it.
That's right. That's exactly right, and that gives us 3 out of 3. And I'm afraid that's all we'll have time for. Mr. Radoff, thank you very much for coming to our party this evening. Now, in a few seconds, I'll announce next week's guests. Tonight, Lucky Strike has paid out one $50 war bond and one set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. And speaking of war bonds... You know, it's no gag, it's no cheap pun when somebody says, is bonds or bondage? The plain fact of the matter is that a large number of the world's population today are slaves. S-L-A-V-E-S, slaves. Now, the French are slaves, rebellious slaves, but slaves. The issue is very simple. Do we want to suffer the fate of the French? If not... The buying of war bonds is one small part of the answer. Think it over. Now, next week, Mr. Franklin P. Adams and Mr. John Kieran will be on hand, and we'll have 2 guests. Our first guest will be the versatile and popular stage star and talented author, Cornelia Otis Skinner, an old friend of this program, whose new book, When We Were Young and Gay, will soon be published. And our second guest will be the one and only raconteur, littérateur, and Samuel Johnson of his era, Mr. Alexander Wilcott. Send letters with questions and the correct answers to information, please, at 480 Lexington Avenue, New York City.